Thursday, April 14th, 2011, and I am interviewing Shannon Dolfe at her apartment in Missoula, Montana. Shannon, would you start by stating your name, birth date, and birthplace for the record?
My name is Shannon Dolfe. I was born in 1990 in Great Falls, Montana.
Shannon, you are 20, almost 21 years old, a very young woman, and I'm wondering what your Irish ancestry means to you as a young person, particularly one far removed from Ireland itself.
I haven't really been exposed to that much Irish culture and heritage because I haven't been, but I consider it a big part of my life because my mom's side of the family has, you know, they're very Irish and we have some pretty Irish traditions. But I think it's important to have a feeling about my heritage because I am so far removed, and I think a lot of people in our generation don't necessarily think about their heritage, and it's not very important to them, and so I try to make it a big part of my life just in order to honor that heritage.
So you said you have a lot of Irish traditions in your family. Could you give me some examples of those?
St. Paddy's Day. It's not really, you know, they don't do it in Ireland as much, but, you know, my grandma always makes corned beef and cabbage, and it's a big deal for the family. We're also very musical, which I think is probably the biggest part of the Irish heritage that I have.
Well, your grandma, in her interview, said that music was a huge part of her family and cultural experience. So what are your memories and experiences specifically of music, as particularly at family gatherings? You know, what kind of instruments did people play? What kind of songs did you sing?
Well, every single member of the family has a piano in their house. So at every holiday gathering, somebody was playing on the piano. Usually my cousins, that are like my parents' generation, the aunts, as we call them, are always playing on the piano. And then the cousins that are my age, we all had piano lessons for many years. My brother and I each took 8 years of piano lessons. And so there was either an adult or a kid always plunking away on pianos. We do holiday plays and skits, especially at Christmas gatherings, and the aunts would either play Christmas carols or make up songs that we did. And as I said, my brother and I both took 8 years of piano lessons. I took 4 years from my great aunt. So that's always a really cherished memory of mine, is spending time with my great aunt. And then everybody on my mom's side of the family was involved in music. My mom and my grandma both sing. And for a while, my mom played the organ at church. My grandma still does most weekends. And then my grandmother played the clarinet, and I actually used her clarinet for a while. And my mom played both the oboe and the clarinet, and I learned how to play the oboe on my mom's oboe. And my brother played trumpet. So we've got quite a bit of, and all the cousins played various instruments. Trombone was a really popular instrument with my cousins for some reason. Some of my other cousins played saxophone. Couple of Sweeneys played saxophone, and there have been other trumpet players in the family. I'm not sure what my great aunts played other than piano, but everybody in my family plays piano.
Were there any specifically Irish songs or things that you sang or played at family gatherings?
I don't know anything specifically Irish, although my he's not really my uncle, but he's one of the cousins in my mom's generation, so we all think of them as aunts and uncles. He is an opera singer, and he lives in Austria. And I do remember at my great uncle's funeral, he did sing Danny Boy. So that's kind of, I guess that's the only really Irish song that's been passed down. But yeah, there's a lot of, we do a lot of traditional, when we do the cutesy Americanized Christmas carols, but we also do some of the more old-fashioned ones. But I think Danny Boy is the only really Irish thing that we do.
What memories do you have of your grandmother's childhood home? Any stories she shared with you or specific memories that you have?
Well, it's on the ranch, and we call it the old house because nobody lives in it anymore, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's the tourist attraction of the ranch. It's what we show people who've never been to the ranch before. I have really fond memories of it because when I was little, my cousins and I and my brother, we always used to go to the old house to, you know, play around, and the cellar and the basement are really creepy, and so, you know, we dare each other to go down in the basement. And I just kind of have a lot of memories of us. It's part of the landscape in some ways, you know, it's just always been there and I'm really used to it being there. But then, you know, now that I'm older, I go in it and, you know, my grandma and her sister's room, you know, you can go in and there's not a lot of furniture left in that house, but, you know, it's really, I don't know, it's kind of a comforting place. And the staircase is really steep up to the upstairs, and so, you know, it's just kind of, you know, there's a lot of sense memory involved with that house. But yeah, we'd always play in it when we were little, and it's always fun to look at, because there is still some furniture left, and it's always fun to look at, you know, the stuff that belonged to them, you know, the toys and stuff. And there is a lot of stuff that my cousins, like their volleyball nets in there and stuff. That's where we store the volleyball net. But there's also a lot of things that they, that were like their possessions and things, furniture and, so yeah.
What sorts of games and things did you play specifically? Do you have any fun stories to share about games you played in the old house?
Well, in the old house, it was a favorite for hide and seek. So you could always count on at least somebody being somewhere in the old house. It was usually the older kids because it was too scary for us younger kids a lot of the time. But it was involved in almost every game of hide and seek. We were kind of rambunctious, so we just kind of run around in there a lot. And then at the ranch, we, especially at the larger family gatherings, we would play Capture the Flag. It's a big one in our family. Which, in some of those games, got a little bit crazy. But yeah, especially if the cousins who don't live nearby were up for the holiday or over from the holiday from Austria, you know, it was a big deal because we hadn't played with them for a while, and everybody in the family would play. Like, my mom and my uncle would get involved, and, you know, so our generation and then my mom's generation, like my cousins in that generation, everybody would play. And I think those are some of my best memories of family gatherings, where the big, you know, we're talking like 30 people, 20 to 30 people playing Capture the Flag on the ranch, and it was really fun. Some people got hurt sometimes.
Yeah, you said sometimes they got crazy. Could you give a specific example?
Well, we're just talking things like, you know, people getting tackled, and, you know, if you're sprinting, if you've got the flag and you're being chased by multiple people, and, you know, like, especially if you're one of the younger kids and they're older than you are and faster than you are, you know, people would eat it. And it's all gravel out there, you know, we're not talking, like, lush green lawns usually, so you'd, you know, fall, in the field or on the gravel and get scraped up. There's one memorable experience where I don't remember who it was, but it wasn't me, thank God. Got tackled into a tree and ended up with, I don't know, some part of their ear got, like, pierced, like, jabbed through a thorn, because there's a bunch of thorn bushes up there. So, yeah, that one was, that game got pretty rambunctious, and, you know, people just falling and spraining stuff because they're being chased and running. So, some of the games, there were casualties of war.
So, could you tell me a little more specifically about the ranch and belt? I know your grandma, when I interviewed her, told me about Annie Fergus establishing the ranch in Geyser. How do you know anything about that and how it connects to the ranch and belt? And could you kind of give me the layout of those ranches?
I'm not very familiar with the ranch in Geyser. I mean, I've known about it all my life, but I've never been there. And I'm not entirely sure how it connects the ranch and belt, but my grandmother grew up there, and so did all of her siblings. And, my great-uncle Clayton, who passed away a couple of years ago, my grandmother's only brother, ran the ranch and belt for many, many years, and his son, Neil, runs it now. I'm not entirely sure the connection between the two. I don't know.
Is the Geyser Ranch still in the family, or was it sold, or?
I believe it was sold. I know, I'm pretty sure it's not in the family any longer, but I don't know how that, I don't know how that transaction took place, but it's not in the family anymore. I've known about it all my life, but we don't really talk about it all that much, because I don't know that many people in my family that have, I don't believe my mom's been to the land, that land or anything, so it's pretty far removed from us.
Yeah. Well then, how about the ranch and belt then? You know, do you feel a real connection to the land itself?
I do. Every summer since I was very little, you know, it's kind of a big deal when we're harvesting. All the little kids, I kind of say that I grew up on a combine in the summers because, you know, we'd all go out on the combine and we'd take runs in the wheat truck, in the grain trucks, and, it was always kind of, during harvest week, it's always, everybody's always out at the ranch, you know, it's kind of a big celebration. And so, I feel a connection, not necessarily to the land itself, but the lifestyle of the ranch and ranching, because both sides of my family are ranchers. And so I've just grown up on that in that environment all my life, on both sides. I grew up on the ranch, basically. So I appreciate the land for the lifestyle that it enables my family and kind of me by proxy to have, because, you know, it's really a different experience to be able to grow up on a ranch and outside of the city. I think it's a very enriching experience.
So you think that really has an effect on who you are, how you perceive yourself?
I do. I think that it's definitely a very integral part of my childhood and who I am. Because I still, when I go home on the weekends, you know, going out to the ranch is a big deal. We always make sure we do it. And it's mostly to see the family there, but it's also because that just the place itself, the locality of it is a very special place to me.
Do you think that's a particularly Irish trait, that kind of connection to the land and letting the land shape who you are?
I think it, to a great degree, for a lot of people, it is, a lot of Irish heritage people, because, especially with, you know, all of the history between Ireland and Britain, it's, you know, land is a very ingrained thing to us. But I think because a lot of the Irish immigrants here, you know, struggled for so long and were homesteaders and stuff, that I think, I don't know that we appreciate the land more, but I think that my family particularly has a very deep connection with it, because, you know, it's our source of, it's our source of, you know, well-being, it's our source of income, you know, and but it's more than that. It's more than just, you know, where we live. It's where we live, you know. It's a very personal place to us.
So tell me a little bit about your grandma, Marilyn Sweeney Anderson. Did she tell you a lot of stories about your family history, either growing up or recently?
Not so much when I was little, other than, you know, the instilling of musical appreciation, which at the time, you know, I didn't necessarily think of as being particularly Irish, but, you know, it is a big part of that side of my family. So as I've grown up, I've kind of come to realize and appreciate that more. But since she started doing research into the family and stuff, you know, she's not specifically talked to me, but, you know, I've been, you know, she talks about it at the dinner table all the time. And, you know, she'll bring out, whenever somebody new comes, she'll bring out the big cart, you know, the big board that she's done with the family tree. And, you know, she'll tell stories. I think one of my favorite stories is, and actually, I don't know, I haven't noticed that we do this now, because we've just got such a big family, but she did always used to say that her grandmother, or her grandmother and her mother were very adamant that there could not be 13 people at a meal. There had to be either more or less, but there could not be 13 precisely, because there's a superstition, I guess, that if you have 13 people at a meal, somebody in the family or at the table will die within that year. And so my grandma she's told it many times, but her mom, literally, there were 13 people at the table, and my grandma said her mom, so my great grandmother, literally, like, just invited a neighbor over to create a table of 14. And so just funny stories, like, you know, little things that don't seem of consequence, I guess, but they're just kind of stories that are passed down. And also Catherine, one of Catherine's, her elder sisters, one of her favorite stories is when she went to Ireland, the people she was staying with, they had just finished a meal, I guess, and Catherine went to take out the garbage, and, you know, she had it all ready to go, and her hosts were like, "You can't go outside. It's dark outside. You can't go outside." And, you know, Catherine was like, "But the garbage needs to be taken out." They're like, "We'll do it in the morning. You can't go outside. That's when the little people come out." And so, you know, they just have very, I don't know, very interesting, very, I feel, unique stories. Also, my grandmother and my mom love to talk about when they went to Ireland together, and this was before I was born. This is when my mother was pregnant with my brother David, but they went to Ireland together, and apparently had grand adventures. I don't know what those consisted of, but and that's why I have my name is they, you know, they went to Shannon, and my mom just loved Ireland so much that she decided she was going to name, she wanted a girl so she could name her Shannon. But, so I think my mom and my grandmother have very treasured memories of when they went to Ireland together, which I need to ask more about, but, yeah, I feel like my grandma and her siblings, especially those, Catherine is her only surviving sibling, I feel like my grandmother and Catherine, because they've both been to Ireland, just have these fun, quirky little stories that they impart to us. And they never make a big deal about it, but, you know, they're just stories I've kind of heard over and over and over again. And so.
Why do you think your grandmother is so invested in recording the family history, particularly the Fergus side? What do you know, like, when she started recording?
I'm not sure when she started delving into family history. She's always kind of been really interested in documenting what's going on now, like our, you know, family goings on. But she's also always been really interested in, she's a dates person, you know. She can tell you what year 3 or 4 generations before her, when they were born, what year they died. So she's always been really interested in that, in, like, the family history. I think she started doing in-depth research in the family trees. I think she started doing that between 10 and 15 years ago. And I'm not sure what exactly made her, at that moment, so keen on finding out about it in depth, but ever since then she's just been very diligent about, you know, she's reworking on a family history, and as to why specifically the Fergus side is, I think it has something to do with the fact that she was so close with her mother, because, you know, my mom also just talks about Grandma Sweeney all the time. You know, my grandmother lives in her mom's house in Belt, and so I think the reason she's so invested in finding out about that side of the family is because my great-grandma Sweeney was just such a... They just had such an amazingly close connection to both my grandma and my mom and my Uncle Carl. They both Carl and my mom talk a lot about Grandma Sweeney. And I never knew her. But I've seen loads and loads of pictures. You know, she was very involved in my mom and my uncle's life. So I think that's probably why my grandma is so invested in learning about where she comes from. I think it was instilled. I think it was probably a big deal to my great-grandmother, and so she kind of instilled that in my grandma.
And her father died when she was very small, right?
Yes. So. Her siblings were quite a bit older than she was. She was the youngest by a number of years. I think it's like 11 years. She was the youngest. And so, yeah, I think we only have one picture of my grandmother with her dad. And it's when she's a little baby. So yeah, she doesn't have a very, strong connection with that relationship because she didn't really know him as well.
So what do you know about Annie Fergus, if anything?
I know Very little. I mean, I've been around, at the, like I said, the dinner table. My grandma will, you know, tell stories and stuff. But I don't know very much specific information. I mean, I know about the farm in the homestead in Geyser. And I know that one of the children died on the trip over. But as far as specific things, I don't know. I don't really know that much. I've just kind of picked up bits and pieces from when I was paying attention at the dinner table.
What do you think about her? I mean, about her establishing the ranch as a widow with 7 children.
I think it's kind of amazing because, you know, some people, you know, they're like, I'm descended from so-and-so, and it's a name everybody knows, and, you know, you go, oh, that's great. But that doesn't really say much about you. You know, the person who says, I'm related to Ben Franklin or something, you know, because they're a person and everybody knows how great they are. But despite the fact that I don't know much about her, I have tremendous respect for her because at that time, you know, widows had nothing going for them at all, you know, and especially with that many children. I wish I could have met her because she sounds like an amazing woman to have been able to, and we don't know how they bought passage over. We don't know how, we have no idea how that came about. But you know, she just must have had amazing strength of character to be able to give up everything that she knew, come here and establish so much because, you know, it's still around technically. I mean, it's not in the same place, but it's still around today. And, you know, her legacy, I've grown up with her legacy and, like, I wish I could have met her. She was an amazing woman.
Does your family have any specific sayings or expressions, turns of phrase that you hear bandied about at family gatherings?
I don't know. I think it's kind of a hard question because our family's kind of quirky, so I'm not necessarily cognizant of things that we do a lot. I don't know about sayings. We're a very physical family. All the aunts that aren't really my aunts, but the cousins, my mom's generation, they're all, you know, they're very, I guess one of them is, even if we've just seen each other, like, the day before, there's always, we all give each other hugs, and especially my cousin Colleen, you know, there's kisses, and, you know, how are you is a big thing. Like, even if we've just seen each other a lot, you know, it's kind of, I don't know if it's just ingrained in us, but we always ask how each other are doing. But as far as turns of phrase, I don't know. I think we're just we're very comical and we're very funny, but I don't think there's any specific things that we say a lot. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything specifically. I'm sure that to an outsider, they'd be like, you say that all the time, or your family's the only people that say that, but I don't know. I can't think of anything, personally.
How did your family, besides St. Paddy's Day, celebrate specific holidays?
Well, we're a huge family, so family, for holiday gatherings, there's usually a lot of people. Let's see. Easter is always celebrated either in Helena at my great aunt Catherine's. That's where we usually have it. And when I was little, there used to be a big hullabaloo about, you know, making it especially, not commercial, but especially memorable for the kids, you know, with the Easter eggs and stuff. And so the men of my mom's generation would go out and hide the eggs, and everybody would go out because she has a lawn on the first floor, and then she has a balcony on the second floor, and so all the adults would go up to the second floor of the balcony and watch all the kids hunting for the Easter eggs, and the older kids would help the younger kids. And so Easter, we always try to get as many people together as we can. Christmas is also another big one because that's when my cousin John and his family, who live in Austria, that's when they're usually able to come over. So I remember Christmases that had like 50 people at them. You know, we're talking many, many people, or 50 plus people. And we always, my great aunt Catherine always brings the rolls. We divvy up, my family, my mom and I always get stuck making salads. We all just kind of fall into our niches, like each family brings certain things. Whoever's hosting is generally in charge of like the turkey or the ham, whichever we're having. So Christmas is always a big deal. And when I was younger, and a lot more of the kids, like our generation was around, the aunts would put together cheesy, awful Christmas plays. One year we did A Christmas Carol, and we'd rummage through all the old clothes, and we'd all have costumes, and there would always be some sort of singing involved.
What role did you play in the Christmas
Carol? I was Mrs. Cratchit. my cousin Joe and I, he's the same age as I were. We were the Cratchit. And then a particularly memorable Christmas, don't remember, a lot of the times the plays didn't actually have plots, it was just a bunch of skits or songs that didn't really link. Sometimes they were, like, literally stories that were written by the aunts. So those ones were generally pretty awful. I mean, we had a good time, but, you know, as we got older, we rebelled. We don't really do those anymore because there aren't as many kids, but, one of the ones that I remember the most was, my Uncle Carl and my cousin Neil, who is the generation above me, singing the Mr. Grinch song, the Christmas plays usually were pretty ridiculous. And we were, a lot of us were drug into participating against our will. But it was good fun until we got old enough to realize how cheesy they were. But yeah, we'd put on, you know, like, old bridesmaid dresses from various people's weddings as costumes, and, you know, we'd make the cheesy, awful, cotton ball beards, and none of the costumes fit very well, and it was, you know, we used to video them, too. Thanksgiving is another one. Thanksgiving is one that that my family personally tends to split between my dad's side and my mom's side, so usually for Thanksgiving, we would spend it with my dad's side of the family, although there were some Thanksgivings that were spent with my mom's side. And those just involved a lot of eating. We eat a lot. And let's see, 4th of July, we always do fireworks out at the ranch in the baseball field. There's always the family baseball game on the 4th of July, also in the baseball field, which Neil likes to call his Field of Dreams. We make a lot of fun of that movie, and it's kind of a treasured joke in the family because, you know, we have a ranch, you know, we have the ranch, and we have the baseball field, and, but every 4th of July, we used to spend it up, in the mountains. We'd go up in the mountains, and there was a campground, but then as, you know, my grandma's generation got older and less mobile, we couldn't have it there anymore, so we just started having it at the ranch. But there's always lots of eating of watermelons. There's usually a water fight involved, like, with the kids usually get into a water fight, which is usually quite unfair, because the older kids make use of the hoses and give the younger kids water balloons. So quite a few 4th of July's spent drenched. And yeah, and the older kids always were in charge of the fireworks, and so, and we have fire marshals, like Carl and my dad, and some of the next generation up males are the fire marshals, and so they make sure we don't burn down the ranch. What other holidays? My brother and I, before my grandmother got remarried, every New Year's Eve, we would go out to my grandmother's and watch Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And during the intermission, we would eat, drumsticks. She would get a box of drumsticks for the occasion. And we would eat Ritz crackers with Easy Cheese. That we did that every single year for a long time until my brother was in high school. And we didn't really have as much time. And then she got remarried. But, New Year's was always kind of a special time for my brother and I, because we'd just go out to Belt and fun time with Grandma, you know, and they'd let me stay up late, and so we celebrated New Year's. What other holidays are there? Then there's the St. Patrick's, which I never got involved with the eating of the corned beef and cabbage, but my mom loves it, so other members of my family enjoyed that a lot more than I did. What other holidays are there?
Well, I think you've covered the big ones.
Yeah.
Unless you had something specific you did for Earth Day.
No. Well, Earth Day is always kind of a weird deal because it's my birthday. But my grandma always used to make birthday cakes. And birthdays are still a big deal in my family. We always go out to Belt as soon as is available for everybody to get together. Or before the actual birthday, because, you know, I'm in college and my brother lives in another state and doesn't come home very often. But, for my grandmother's birthday and, my parents' birthday, we always go out to dinner. So birthdays are usually cause for a good celebration, and my grandma always makes cake. And until I was about in middle school, I always insisted that my grandma make my cake. So she'd bring in these ridiculous, beautiful, gorgeous cakes that she went through a phase where she liked. But that's what she did. She iced cakes. And so she'd bring these garish, glorious cakes to my birthday parties. And I felt really rad because I didn't have store-bought cake. So birthdays are a big deal. My grandmother always insists that we have to have something to open, literally, you know, a package to open or a card to open or something. So, even though a lot of times now that I'm older, she takes us, she'll take me shopping, you know, for something. This last weekend when I was home for spring break, she took me shopping and got my early birthday present, but she said she's going to be sending me a card because she always insists that we have to have something to open. And she does that with Christmas too. Even if we've bought the present, if we've gone shopping with her for the present, she's like, oh, just forget. Forget it exists, and she'll wrap it and put it under the tree even though we know what it is. Just so that, because I don't know why, but in our family, even if you know what the present is, it's a big deal about actually opening it and, ripping off all the paper, and Christmas is kind of, I guess another thing about Christmas is, although we do have the big gatherings, Christmas Eve, it's just me and my brother and my mom and my dad. We eat candlelight dinner. We've taken to ordering pizza. It's a tradition, though, and I firmly uphold it. My grandma's always like, you should come out for our, Christmas Eve dinner, but I won't have it. We have to have our Papa Murphy's candlelight pizza dinner with the bubbly, sparkling cider. And then we open our presents at home. And then we wake up Christmas Day and we do all of our stockings. And then we go out to my grandmother's, and my Uncle Carl joins us. And then we do like a family thing there before everybody descends on the house for Christmas dinner and the family gift exchange. So we do have a more intimate, personal Christmas traditions, rather than, 50 plus people. But, and then I forgot to mention, Christmas we have a gift exchange, which I think this past Christmas we had 24 people in, which doesn't, I mean, my dad is never in it, but, everybody brings a gift, and some people are awful about it and bring gag gifts, but usually, they're really primo stuff. There's always multiple bottles of wine, and we have very specific, it's not laissez-faire, like, there's rules to our gift exchange. The third person, you can steal, but the third person who has it, that item, they're the owner. You can't steal it after the third person, but we've had some really, really nice stuff in that. That's always the centerpiece of Christmas celebrations. It comes after dinner, but before the dessert phase of the day. Holidays are a big deal in my family. There's just lots of people. There's tons of food. We always, everybody is sent home with leftovers, and we're eating leftovers for a week after every holiday. So it's very, and it's a lot of times it's the only time we get to see some of the people in the family. So holidays, especially Christmas, are a big deal. We all try to get together.
Do you have any family heirlooms or mementos, particularly pertaining specifically to Ireland?
I know that a lot of my grandmother's stuff, like her silver and all that kind of stuff, has been passed down to her. And my mom has some stuff that she got in Ireland, so I don't know that it's family heirlooms yet, because they're only, one generation, but, the main thing I can think of is the silver. On my, dad's side, which, they're Irish a little bit too, but, my uncle went to Ireland, just kind of on a trip, and, he brought back, a clatter ring for my grandmother, and he has one for himself, but, my grandpa just died, and so my family has been, going through my grandparents on my dad's side stuff, and, I don't think there's any will to speak of, so it's, whoever wants, whoever feels a special connection to certain pieces, and I've been wanting a clatter ring for quite some time, and so my grandma let me have hers, so I've been wearing it, and so, I consider that as kind of like a treasure. But that's more of a me personally. I don't know that it's a family heirloom. A lot of my grandmother's stuff, she got from, she lives in her mother's house. And so a lot of the furniture and stuff is very, we have special attachment too, and the silver is the big thing. She only gets that out for Christmas and Thanksgiving, basically. otherwise it resides under her bed. And she polishes it twice a year. She takes very good care of the silver because, it's silver, but also because it was her mother's and it's been passed down, so.
So you are going to Ireland next winter for study abroad.
I will be there for about 2 weeks.
So what can you tell me about that? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I think I would enjoy it more if I was just kind of going as a trip. It is a study abroad, and it's very structured, so I can't just kind of run around and see what I want to. But we're basically going all over the island, so I will get to see quite a bit. I think and if I had the opportunity to, you know, travel by myself and see what I wanted to, I would definitely ask my grandma the information about, you know, like where ancestors are buried and that kind of stuff, and go see that, which I don't think I'll be able to do, which I'm pretty sad about, because that's where the, you know, that's where they're buried and that's where they lived and stuff. But also my mom and my grandmother have been to see that, so, you know, it'd be linking a bunch of generations. I think the thing I'm most excited to see is Shannon, actually, because, I don't know, I've always had a fascination with it. Maybe it's because my mom loved it so much. I mean, she named me after the town and the river, but also, yeah, I think that's the thing I'm most excited about, simply because I just always link it so much with my Irish heritage, even though they weren't from that area. I'm also really excited because I'm an anthropology major, and so I'm interested in all the megaliths, and I'm really excited that we're going to Newgrange, and, you know, we're going to all these fabulous places. So I'm really excited to see the monuments of Irish history, like the Irish history itself, not just my Irish history personally, but just, you know, it's a very fascinating place with a lot of very rich history, so I'm excited about that. I'm also really excited because I'm kind of a cultural anthropologist at heart, and so I'm really excited to go and experience the culture. You know, maybe I'll realize that some of the stuff we do is really, you know, maybe I'll find something that I never realized was super Irish or something. But I'm also excited because I'm going to be taking Gaelic next semester. And so I'm kind of excited to go and hear it spoken and that kind of stuff. Because I don't know anybody in my family that knows any of it besides, you know, like Sláinte. But everybody knows Sláinte, so that doesn't really count. But so I'm excited to, you know, I love languages, and so I'm keen to just have another connection with my Irish ancestors, be able to speak, you know, what they spoke.
So, before we wrap things up, are there any other particular stories that you're eager to share about your Irish ancestry?
I don't know that it's particularly Irish, but it does have to do with, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about music, but my mom always used to sing to me both my parents did, but my mom especially, and actually I've taken to having her sing to me a lot more recently, too, just been kind of nostalgic. But in particular, I know you want particulars, my most requested song is The Rose. So my mom used to sing that to me when I was little quite often, usually before I went to sleep. So that's kind of a very big part of my life. But my dad also used to sing to me, and he would sing Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Especially when I was sick, he would stay up with me all night, and he'd sit in his leather banana chair next to my bed, and he would sing to me. So I think that's, as far as musical things go, my family's really musical, but those are the musical memories that I think I have the most heartfelt connection with, is my parents singing to me. I don't know if they sang to David, but they may have, but I don't know. I think that's the musical thing I have the most connection to, because a lot of the other musical stuff, like gatherings, the music was comical, you know. We enjoyed it. A lot of it was written by my aunts. Just kind of like spur of the moment, like hour before we put on the Christmas play. So a lot of it was awful rhyming and stuff. And so I have very fond memories of that, but it's a different feel. It's a different vibe to it. And so, I think that's the only thing I left out.
What would you say have been the most striking changes in your life thus far?
Striking changes. It's a hard question to answer. I hate to go with the whole high school experience, but high school was very, very trying time personally, but also, you know, there's the whole going through changes of, you know, you're growing up, you have to decide what you're going to do with your life. High school was also, when I was in high school, my brother was in college, and so that kind of dissolution of family was a big deal. Kind of a cop-out answer, high school. But also there have been a couple of instances when my grandmother got remarried was a big change, because my brother and I were used to being the only grandchildren, and we had grandma all to ourselves, and she spoiled us rotten. Not that she doesn't still, but when my grandma got remarried, it was a pretty big change, having somebody new in the family. When I was little, from about when I was 9 to 11, I had a bunch of family members actually from both sides of the family pass away. And that was, a lot of those were very hard personal experiences. Especially my Uncle Kevin, he's the one who went to Ireland. And brought back the clatterings. That was a big turning point in my life. As far as, more so my dad's side of the family, but, you know, it was the first real death of a family member that impacted me directly. I was old enough to understand, and so it made me appreciate family much more. And think about the family connection a lot more, rather than, you know, they're just people you see all the time and take for granted. So that was kind of an eye-opener. Someone else. I did forget to mention Memorial Day, because every Memorial Day, we all trek up to the cemetery outside Belt, and all of our relatives, we replant flowers, and we weed their, you know, the graves, and clear out all the pine cones and pine needles that accumulate, and so I think a lot of big changes in my life have come, like, personal growth moments, I guess, have been related to deaths in the family, and the reaction to those, because they're sad times, but also some of the wildest, I don't know if celebration is the correct word to use at this juncture, but, you know, we do throw a good traditional Irish wake, you know, there's a lot of drinking involved, it's sad, but also it's a really guaranteed way to bring the family together. So I think those have been the biggest turning points or changes in my life. I mean, I don't purport to have had that many. I'm only, you know, 20, but yeah, I think those are it.
If you were to write the history of the Irish in Montana, what would you include for future generations?
I don't know. What would I include in the history of the Irish Montana? Where you'd have to include Butte, America. Because a lot of people, you know, that's the first thing they immediately think of. When you say Irish Butte, you know, they think of Butte immediately. But I think I would include for future generations. I think I'd include a lot of really personal things because, you know, you hear so much about, especially like Butte and, you know, like the influx of people there, but you don't really hear personal, down to earth individual stories all that much, I guess. Or I haven't, and I don't know many people who know all that much in depth or in detail about the actual people who came here and who, you know, lived here, set up families here, and, you know, a lot of them homesteaded, not just in Montana, but, you know, all over. But, you know, I think I would include really personal things about the actual people who came, rather than just saying, oh, lots of Irish people came to Butte during the mining, you know, or like, you know, it was, a lot of them came to Montana because it was a good place for homesteading, and it was a nice, you know, it was not a nice place, but a good place to start over. But you don't hear very many personal accounts, so I think I would include more of those.
Good. Well, thank you very much for taking time to allow me to interview you today.
No problem. You are very welcome.